Well, it's 10 o'clock, and it looks like we got who we got. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Yeah, there's a seat for you. Good. I'm David Chong. You are in the Clinging to Our Bibles and Our Guns seminar. We didn't know what to call it, so there it is. We last spoke in 2016. Right after these Gunmageddon laws had passed, there were seven bills and a Prop 63 ballot measure that passed that basically reinforced all of those anti-gun, anti-constitutional laws. It radically dismantled gun rights in California more than any other time in history. This is far worse than the assault weapon ban of 1999. There are more rights gone, more common firearms banned, more activities and uses that are now illegal, more restrictions on what used to be common sense, everyday, safe, and normal firearms activities. In the last year, then, the California DOJ issued their code of rules and regulations based on those laws that came out, and they went even further than the law. So in between the time we've talked, even more things have been banned outside of the law based on California DOJ's interpretation of what they thought they meant. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, for example, all of those laws I just mentioned that were passed applied to rifles and pistols. When the DOJ issued the regulations, they wrote regulations banning rifles, pistols, and shotguns. The law doesn't say anything about shotguns, but now an entire class of semi-automatic shotgun, anything that's magazine-fed, where the magazine can come out of the firearm, that's now illegal. So there's a lot to untangle, just like last time, and I want to give you hopefully what you need to know, and then to give you the tools to make your own decision. Again, just like last time, some people are going to need milk. Some people are going to be eating meat. It really depends on your individual situation, and neither one is wrong. It's my hope that I can instill in you just the knowledge that you need in order to make your own informed decision. So let's pray together, shall we, brothers? Father, thank you so much, Almighty God. You are the creator of all things, including the blacksmith who fans the coals into flame and forges a weapon fit for its work. And Lord, I thank you for bringing us all here today. We have hearts for you, hearts after you, and we just long to be men of honor. And so, Lord, we dedicate this time to you. I ask you to perfect my words from my mouth to these men's ears, that you would hear them, that they would hear the message that you intend for them. We pray in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you. So I'm David Chong. Just walking through my history, I started 152nd TAC Recon in the security forces, moved on to counterterrorism special agent with Air Force OSI. After that, DHS counterterrorism and counterintelligence instructor. Later on, became a gunsmith and firearms dealer, went into business for myself. I now own Alpha Omega Sword Firearms in El Cajon. Alpha Omega Sword is a very specific name. The logo is a downturned sword, which represents a warrior who is prepared for battle, but he's at rest and at peace. It also forms a sign of a cross. It's a sword that's a lot of symbolism there. The sword of the Spirit, the Word of God. The Word of God is Jesus, and therefore I intended my logo to be honoring to God. I'm a politician. I am the elected president of the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Board of Education. Thank you. I appreciate that. I really am proud of my service there, and I truly believe in our mission of educating children, providing for a safe place to study. You know, we had yet another tragedy yesterday in Texas, instigated by a person who did bad things. It wasn't instigated by a gun, right? It's what somebody did with a gun. They could have just as easily done that with a truck. So we have a serious heart issue in this country right now, and that needs serious addressing, and most of all, a miraculous turn of this culture and this society. Am I right? Yeah. So you may have seen me in the news, actually, because of my crossover with guns, as a gun professional and also as an educator. My political opponents have splashed me all over TV and newspaper articles lately, asking how can I possibly be a dealer of death and also care for children. So, it's been wonderful, actually. There's been some unfair things said, and it's a shame that my words have been misrepresented. It's going to happen, and I will tell you, brothers, if there's any concern, I am standing strong. I believe in what I believe. And I know I'm on the side of righteousness, and I know you all have my back. So it's been good. Thank you. So let's dive in, because we last year, oh my goodness, there were a lot of questions, and we got busy. Gunmageddon, what does this mean for me? Well, it boils down to felonies, gentlemen. It's not, oops, sorry, I didn't know. These are felonies that will rip you from your families, end your lives as you know it, prevent you from being legal firearms owners for the rest of your life, prevent you from holding certain jobs. It's a big deal. The good news is, generally, these are add-on felonies. So, in other words, at this time, I don't see people out there rounding up guns. I don't see law enforcement going out. I don't see district attorneys or even the Department of Justice, which is rabidly anti-gun. I don't see them doing witch hunts just to find people in possession of illegal firearms or illegally configured firearms. What I do see is a guy gets a speeding ticket and is upset about the ticket, gets charged with resisting arrest, and then it turns out that he had an improperly configured AR-15 in his car, and now he gets the assault weapon charge. If you are out of compliance, that speedometer better always be at 55, 35, whatever the speed limit is. I'm not advising you to break the law. As a matter of fact, what I'm saying is, if you're not going to comply, oh my goodness, don't let that be the thing that pushes your bad day with a stay overnight in lockup into a change in your life. We're facing seizure and loss of property without compensation, which is a violation of our Fifth Amendment right. That is a constitutional violation, and we're going to see how so many of these things are, in fact, constitutional violations. And one of my core points here that I want to just drive home is that the Constitution is the supreme law of this land. And so as we are called in the Bible to submit to all worldly authorities, because those authorities have been instituted by God, the ultimate authority in this country is what? Thank you very much. Yes. So there's a registration and restrictions. If you choose to register as an assault weapon, any of the firearms that you currently own, you can't drive around with them. You have special storage restrictions. You cannot lend them out at all. You cannot even provide access to them without you being present. There is a historic precedent here. Registration does lead to confiscation. That's been proven out time and again in other countries. It's been proven a few times in this country, and I want to really, really underscore this. We thought that we were protected from this kind of regulation that we've seen in Gunmageddon because it's completely unconstitutional. That hasn't helped. There have been, since Gunmageddon came out, there have been suits. And they've worked their way up through the notorious Ninth Circuit Court, and the unconstitutional laws have been upheld. In addition, there are every year new bills being introduced in the California state legislature, and this is chilling, guys, saying we already have all of the registration information we need. Let's start confiscating the AR-15s. And this is true. Even though they only started actually registering, officially recording in a database all long gun sales in California in 2014, they have all of the information since 1999, because 1999 they were supposed to, they were, that's when they started doing universal background checks in California. No more meet up at your buddy's house and, hey, I've got this gun, $500. Yeah, sounds great. Perfectly legal up till 1999. Then they started doing it all through dealers. They have all that information. How do I know? Just even, first of all, I know because I've talked to law enforcement. But second of all, singular example, one of my customers who's buys a lot of guns. He made somebody mad, I guess, and didn't know it, but because there wasn't a confrontation. But he showed up to his house yesterday, passed a couple of guys just hanging out on the street in their car, thought, oh, that's weird. 30 seconds after he entered his home, knock on the door, he comes out, there's a badge. It was the ATF, the feds, saying, sir, we have to ask you a few questions. We've had a complaint that, or a concern that you may be engaged in terrorist activities. He laughed, they laughed. May we come in? My father's retired law enforcement, he would roll over, he's former law enforcement, he passed away. He would roll over in his grave if I let you in without a warrant. Okay, we understand. They had a nice chat on the patio. They said, okay, well, we'd like to see these guns. And he pulled out a folder, and he had every gun listed that our customer had bought since the dawn of time. Wow. And he was amazed at the stuff that was on that list. And so at random, he picked, so let me see this one, and wow, you have one of those? Let me see that one. And that was more of a fanboy question. He brought them out, and again, they finished their conversation. Sir, you're clearly of sound mind and a stable person. I have no concerns. We actually get a lot of these calls that we go to every week. You'd be surprised. And my customer, my friend, he felt a little violated. He felt a little strange that someone could see with that much detail into his personal life. My point is this is a normal guy, gun enthusiast. They know what he has. And this is going to come up later in our discussion. Don't think that, well, I ain't registering because I don't want them to know what I have. My friends, they already know what you have. Our government knows what you have. There are some exceptions, such as things that were passed down to you from your family. There are some exceptions, such as things that you received in trade back and forth between family and friends or whatever, back when it was legal before 1999, right? Well, just like all of your guns. Those are off the books, but anything you've bought lately at all, and really what we're talking about is the guns we've bought lately that they're concerned about, right? AR-15s, AKs, semi-automatic centerfire rifles, those kinds of guns, they know you have them. We have a one-time opportunity right now. That's it. June 30th is the last day to decide what you're going to do. If what you're going to do is register, that timeline is even shorter. And I'll explain that in the next segment, that basically today, Monday, your next business day, that's your last day because of the timelines of things that need to happen for some specific cases. So you can jump through hoops and transfer a gun after it is registered as an assault weapon. I want you to remember that. Some people are thinking, well, shoot, if I take this and, I made this from scratch. I'm proud of it. I don't want to register it as an assault weapon, and then when I pass on or when I'm done with it, I can't even pass it to my son. I'm supposed to turn it in, and they're going to destroy it. It's not exactly true. There are several provisions in the law. I mean, there's hoops to jump through, but you're going to have 90 days either after you passed on or you could also have any opportunity at any time to change the configuration of the gun, deregister it as an assault weapon, and then sell it or trade it or pass it on as you wish. You can also sell it out of state at any time. So you're not just absolutely stuck with it, dead end. It's a brick after you're done with it. There used to be expanded flexibility and function for registered assault weapons, according to the way the law was written. And here's one of those things where they did a switcheroo on us between the law as written and their interpretation at the DOJ. It was going to be that if you had an assault weapon with a bullet button, well, once you registered it as an assault weapon, you could take that bullet button off and have a AR-15 the way God intended, right? Just hold it with a pistol grip and detach the magazine with a push of a button. They created a extra legal classification of bullet button registered assault weapon. That doesn't exist anywhere in the legal code. They just made it up. But they, I mean the Department of Justice. It probably would hold up in our extremely liberal anti-gun Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It might not hold up at the federal level. By the time it went to the Supreme Court, you can bet that they would retroactively, they meaning California legislature and the governor, presumably a Democrat, would just rewrite the law a little bit to say, oh, we meant bullet button assault weapons. So now the bullet button has to stay on if you register it. Everybody clear with that? I know this is a lot of soupy garbage. I'm going to try to break it down for you. So we'll get to that. Good question. All right, so what is going away? Next section. Bullet buttons. You can't have for a long time, since the early 2000s, a bullet button was good to go. You'd have to put something in there in order to release the magazine. This is no longer good to go in California. This is now an assault weapon. 80% builds, home-built firearms that start with a non-firearm. You drill a few holes, you get it on a mill and mill it out there, and then you have the foundation of a gun, right? The camera's on me, not you. How many of you guys have built 80s? So a fair amount, and the hands keep coming up after they think about it. But so that's a special case. This is the situation where you have a decision to make today, because if you don't do something by Monday, you won't have a choice anymore. 80% built guns that have been finished by you will only be registerable and therefore only legal up until June 30th. Here's the problem. They take about 5 weeks to get you a serial number to put on your gun. There's just two different paths here. If you have an 80 percenter that you then intend to register as a bullet button assault weapon, there's two registrations that have to happen. First, you have to ask the state, say, I have already made, I am before the June 30th deadline, I'm grandfathered in, I made this back before the end of 2016, give me a serial number. Well, I already put a serial number on some of mine, too bad. If I want to register it as a bullet button assault weapon, I've got to get their serial number on it. And I can't even erase mine because it's federally illegal to erase mine. So it's going to have two serial numbers on it. One I have on it, one that they give me. You're going to take 4 to 5 weeks to get that serial number back. Then you're going to have 2 to 4 days to go get somebody to engrave that number on your lower, take 4 photographs of it, and then send it back to them by June 30th. You'll be doing it on June 29th. Saying, please register this now as an assault weapon. Does everybody understand that? Monday. You look at that. You look at the timeline. The last week of June is basically when you're going to need to get that engraving stuff done, and you know everybody's going to be busy, right? Everybody will be very busy helping people with compliance in that last week, and all of the CNC mills, all of the laser engravers, mine. I know I'm going to be backed up. That's probably all I'm going to be doing. Before you can even do that, they got to give you the number to put on it. It's right now it's averaging 4 to 5 weeks. You had a question?
What if you don't build it out? What if it's not drilled out?
If it's not drilled out, that is not a firearm. Right. Lucky for you, California legislature has actually passed through committee that a not drilled out piece of metal, a brick, is a firearm. They have also put through in the same bill, they're saying any component that goes into building a firearm is a firearm. So if that bill were to become law, not just this upper receiver that I sell at my shop, but in fact, you would have to go through a background check to purchase that bolt carrier group. Yeah, right, right. So how many things, if you start thinking about it, how many things can you put on a gun that are part of a gun? I mean, metal, plates of metal are now guns. So that's what happens, right, individual springs. There are individual springs that can, exactly. It's a problem. That's what happens when people who aren't gun people write gun laws. And then they exempt themselves from their own laws. That's correct. So with the 80 percenters, the complete answer to your question, because I want to be clear, if it is undrilled currently, it is not a firearm. There's nothing necessary. However, understand that if you intend to drill it out in the future legally, you would have to first apply for permission. They would do a background check on you, and then they would issue you a serial number. So this is a critical point. Like right now, before June 30th, I can tell them, guys, it wasn't illegal to do it at the time. It wasn't regulated. And so way back in 2010, I made my lower receiver. And I know I have until the 30th to tell you I did that. And then they'll give you a serial number retroactively. After June 30th, you can't tell them I built it a while back. If you tell them, hey, I built this last week, give me a serial number, you get a knock on the door.
Yeah, I understand that.
All right.
I'm just saying if I just left it in the garage and never drilled it out and then moved there
later. That would be perfectly...
Is it legal to just have it in my garage?
Currently, yes, but there's pending legislation to make it illegal to have that 80 percenter.
So my next question is if I did drill it out and it's a complete lower, but it's not built out to the gun...
Completely illegal. That's a...
No parts kitted or anything. It's still...
That's a unregistered, illegally constructed firearm.
Okay.
Correct. Did everybody hear the question and answer? So if he had two questions, one is, okay, well, what if I, just like I bought it from the store, it's a brick, it's an 80 percenter, it hasn't been drilled or anything, it's not a firearm yet. Is it legal to have? Currently, yes, but there is pending legislation to make that a firearm as well, make that illegal. Second question, okay, well, what if I did drill it out? What if I did drill it out, but I didn't put anything in it? It's just a hunk of metal that's been prepared to receive firearm parts, but I haven't put anything in it yet. Well, as long as it's been drilled out and it's in the configuration of a firearm, both federally and at the state level, that is considered a firearm. So that's completely illegal. That is two felonies, manufacturing a firearm and being without a license and being in possession of a unregistered firearm.
It's a factory-built lower also, obviously?
No, so if it's a factory-built lower, as long as you bought it legally, it's completely legal. I'll get into some specifics on that when we go over the different ways of compliance. So we're going to go into compliance next. The last thing I want to talk about the change is ammunition. Ammunition is gone. You can't buy ammunition online anymore. Some are still sending it here if you find those suppliers good for you. There's some national ammo sales websites that are still shipping into California because they don't care about California law. The problem is, it's not their problem, it's your problem. If you get investigated on your credit card receipts and it's found that you ordered ammunition online and had it illegally sent to your home, that's a felony. That's amazingly bad. You had a question about ammo?
How about COEs and
If you have a 03 federal firearms license, that's a special lower class of firearms dealer, FFL, federally licensed firearms dealer, you can have ammunition sent to your home because you are, in fact, a dealer. You have to, in addition to your federal 03 license, you also have to get a California ammunitions license. They'll grant that to you if you have a COE. That's a certificate of eligibility. So that's a very specific case. It's a few hoops to jump through, but there still is a way for a person who doesn't own a gun store to buy ammunition online legally. You have a question?
What about having your ammo shipped to an FFL?
Perfectly legal. So all that the state of California wants is for the ammunition you buy to go through an FFL or an other licensed ammunition vendor. So if you buy, 1,000 rounds of ammo online, you ship it to your FFL, they'll charge you some kind of handling fee. In our case, we charge 10%. Some stores will do $30 no matter what it is. The hard part is the people with lower fees tend to have, by appointment only schedules. So it just depends on how much work you want to do to get your ammo, at what price. To just be careful, even if you can do it, you realize that you are committing a verifiable crime. What I want to talk about next is what you should do about it. So we understand at least a little bit. I've outlined the laws and the changes and the things that have happened. What should you do about it? Your options are, just like we talked about in 2016, comply, convert, or go covert. And there's advantages and disadvantages to each. Compliance means registration, maybe twice. Like I said in the previous section here, if you have an 80% lower that you intend to register as a bullet button assault weapon, that's two separate registration processes. The first process that you need to do by when?
Monday.
Is write them, tell them what it is. It has to be a complete firearm. That's very important. It can't be just a lower. You have to remember, the law is, you had to have already built this out into a complete gun by the end of 2016. So for darn sure, when you fill out that form, you're going to remind them or verify that it was a complete firearm by the end of 2016. That is specifically if you intend to register that as an assault weapon, a bullet button assault weapon, right? I know it's confusing. So there's two different paths for 80 percenters, multiple. But let's say I built this into a gun back in 2016, okay? If I want to build it into a assault weapon and register it before the deadline, I have got to get my number from them before the last week of the 30th, of June, so that I can then do my engraving and stuff. If I do not intend to register it as an assault weapon, I'm going to convert it. I'm going to do the no pistol grip, or I'm going to do the locked magazine where it won't come out of the receiver unless I open the action. I don't have to get that number for them. They will allow you to keep your own number if it's not going to be an assault weapon. Everybody understand that? Matter of fact, they won't even give you a number. They'll tell you, well, since you're not going to register this as an assault weapon, we're not going to give you a number. It's really confusing. So there's two registrations for the 80 percenters. For everybody else, there's just one registration, and here's how they want you to do it. The gun needs to be complete. You need to take a picture, and this is on their website. You need to take a picture of the entire right, the entire left, a close-up of the numbers on the receiver that shows its registration information, its serialization information, and they want a close-up photograph of the mechanism that locks the magazine in there, whether it's your bullet button or your paddle block for an AK system. Whatever your mechanism is for locking the magazine in, they want a close-up of that. That website where you're going to do that registration, if you choose, is called CFARS, California Firearms Automated Registration System. CFARS. If you intend to register, write that down. That's going to be, you just Google CFARS, and it's going to be the first hit that comes up, California Registration. You can register as many guns as you want at a time for the single fee of, I think it's $35. So any questions on registration. Okay. What that gives you is a registered assault weapon. I happen to think that there is a loophole in the unconstitutional and extra lawful regulation. So again, remember, the law said, if you got a bullet button in it from now on, it's just going to be an assault weapon. You're allowed to register it as an assault weapon. The law doesn't say you're allowed to register it as a bullet button assault weapon. The law just says you're allowed to register it as a California assault weapon. That would mean, logically, that now it's an assault weapon. It can have assault weapon features. It can do whatever an assault weapon does in California, including not have a bullet button. But the regulation states, and again, this is non-gun people writing gun law, the regulation states whatever magazine lock equipment that is on the gun at the time of registration has to stay on the gun. Well, okay. I'm using a adjustable mag lock. And so I'm going to keep this on the gun even after I register. However, with a quick flick of a screwdriver or something else pointy, this backs out, still on the gun, but becomes a regular magazine release. That is in compliance with the law as written, with the regulation as written. The law as written says I can have a regular magazine button on there. But that's a potential loophole to the regulation currently, which says it has to stay on there. Okay, well, it can stay on there, but I can adjust it. So there's no similar option for AKs, but I like that option a lot for ARs if you choose to register as an assault weapon. Next choice is convert. A lot of questions about conversion. The three main ways of converting are either to go featureless, a lot of talk about that, a lot of different ugly ways to junk up your AR-15 to make it featureless. You can convert it to a 22 long rifle because being a rimfire, it's not subject to assault weapon laws, not most of them anyway. There's still some overall length laws and so forth, but in general, the laws we think about don't apply to rimfire cartridges. And you can also do a locked magazine option. So you guys all heard of those things? So here are some examples of featureless. You really get painted into a corner on AKs because there's not a lot of ways to make this featureless to where it's still a handy gun. And the reason why is because the trigger is right up there against the bottom of the receiver, and there's just no way to get around it. So the only way to make an AK featureless is to add this paddle. I really dislike these because I do not have positive control of this firearm. I'm barely hanging onto it with a very stiff grip. So just a basic rule of firearm safety is always have positive control of your firearm so that it doesn't slip out of your hand and go off accidentally or, heck, dent your gun. So, and then not even to mention the fact that, of course, in a defensive situation, the last thing you want is not to have complete control of your gun and have it taken away from you, or just lose it at an inopportune time, because it's really hard in the middle of a firefight to say, excuse me. Another option, so this is what maybe some of you are more familiar with, is some kind of system on an AR-15 that prevents it from having a pistol grip that protrudes conspicuously beneath the action of the firearm. This one protrudes to the rear. And more importantly, here's the bottom of the receiver, and that line where the trigger comes out never goes above the point where the webbing of my thumb and forefinger goes behind the trigger. That's complicated, but basically, my thumb has to be up above the trigger. Does that make sense? I like this system a lot, but I wouldn't choose it if I had my choice of anything, but given California's restrictions, I like this a lot because I have complete control of this firearm. And it fires basically like a sporting rifle. Ooh, hi. It It's the same same grip I have with a shotgun, same grip I have with my lever-action guns. It doesn't bother me that much. Again, it's not what I'd choose if I had my choice of anything, but it's not my ideal. The other option for compliance is one of several choices on Bullet Button Reloaded. Some people call it. That's one brand. Another brand is the Cross Armory Safe Mag and Quick Pins. Another brand is Juggernaut Tactical. Still another brand is Hogue. We carry literally all of them at AO Sword Firearms because each one gives you a different price point, different features, and different accessibility. Also, some require just temporary bolt-ons, or reversible bolt-ons, I should say. Others permanently alter your gun. The one setup that we're calling the I think the ultimate setup or perfection is one in which it's a regular magazine release, completely normal here, but there is an alteration to the lower receiver itself. I drill a stepped hole in the lower receiver with a sprung detent, and that sprung detent shoves down to block this magazine release when the action is closed. However, a simple push of this button opens the upper receiver, just a little bit of captive, but just enough to where the magazine comes all the way out. Also, because it's not really altering any of my hardware, I can put that back in, even with the upper receiver still cracked open, just pop that down, and I'm ready to go. So I really like this system. It's actually a mix of two different brands. There's Juggernaut Tactical in the back and a proprietary hole and alteration in the front. And I like it for its elegance. Nobody puts them together like that. And so that's about $150 all in. The disadvantage, well, let me go over some other ones. There's a Cross Armory one where instead of a push button back here, it's a pinch of two paddles. That's pretty neat. It opens the upper receiver all the way. And another thing about that one is as soon as you open it, the magazine automatically comes out. That's one step faster. Then you close it right back up, get your new magazine in, and you're good to go. That system's more expensive, but there's no permanent alteration to the firearm. You could go back to normal at any time. I will say with this permanent alteration, you could pull that stuff back out of that hole, and there is there's a cap screw that keeps it all in. You just put the cap screw on and Loctite it, and it'd be as if it never happened. So one other way is just the Juggernaut Tactical system. The reason I don't love that one, I really love their back pin, but the reason why I don't love it as a whole system is it changes out your bolt catch. And so you lose the ability to hold this bolt back in the rear. That's really important. At some, these just don't want to stay here. At some ranges, you have to be able to show clear with an empty chamber. That's also, regardless of what the range law is, that's safety. It's a very good idea in terms of safety to be able to show clear in a gun that's just laying there. Without even touching the gun, I can walk by, there's nothing there. And I know that gun is safe and clear. It's also, from a defensive standpoint, a disadvantage to be running your course or firing in defense of your life, and bang, 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 and you don't realize you fired the last round because the gun feels just the same as it did. There's no hold open, there's no change in sound or feel, and looking at it visually, you can't tell whether or not there's a round in the chamber. You have to do a press check. So I don't like that. There is a disadvantage. Those are basically the different options you have available to you. None of them are bad. They all just do different things, different solutions to the same problem. Here's why I don't like this solution at all on a gun that you intend to employ as potentially a defensive firearm. Anything that might be used in a real situation as opposed to fun and training and play on the range. If you have a stoppage, if you have a malfunction in an AR-15, the most common one that you will have is some kind of failure to eject, okay? Either a failure to extract leading to a double feed or a failure to eject leading to two rounds nosed up in the chamber. It's a mess. And the way to clear this quickly and relatively easily is to rip the magazine out. That prevents that second round that's stuck up in there from gumming up the works. That second round will usually fall out with that magazine. And then you can just shake the other round out. If you have to, you can run it several times to get it extracted from the chamber, and you're clear. Here's the problem. When a action-locked gun is in a double-feed scenario, there's no way to rip the magazine. You have to, in order to get the magazine out, thereby preventing additional rounds from coming up into the chamber when you rack, right? You've got to open the action. The action of an AR-15 cannot be opened when the bolt is out of battery. The bolt has to be all the way forward to, this is the wrong one to use as an example. The bolt has to be all the way forward in order to open this up. Because look, if it is the least bit back, yeah, it's going to interfere with this tower, the buffer tower. So you are you're stuck. There's no way to get that thing out. The best option if you can't get the receivers out is to take a knife or something, and you're holding this thing open and you're fishing out live rounds. Meanwhile, you remember what I said before. Excuse me a minute. Stop shooting. I've got a problem. The other way is very difficult. With the bolt in the rearward position, you're going to have to try to get both pins out. I can't even do it. Both pins have to come out of the gun, and then you have to pry it forward to get, well, it's not going to work. You can see how hard it is. Let me see if I can try this one. With both pins out. Thank you. I hate shaky guns. I hate the guns that go wiggle wiggle. All right, with this thing to the back, it is just really hard to get this sucker to come off. See how it's locked up in there? It has to come forward quite a bit before you can eventually. Yeah, and then I had to get it that close, and you're usually not going to get it that far when there's two rounds in the way. So another way, we'll come back for questions on all of those configurations because that's a big barrel of monkeys. Another way that you can prevent your AR-15 from being an assault weapon and be in complete legal possession of it is by doing this right here. That's it. That is it. I can have this in my car and this in my car, and it is completely legal because this is not an assault weapon. This can stay in my safe. I can drive around with it. I can possess it forever under the current law, just like this, and it is not an assault weapon. Well, great. There's your answer, right? When am I going to shoot it? Never. Where? Never. I just keep it around for a bad day. All right, bad day comes, you put it together, and you shoot a bad guy. Now you've used an assault weapon. You've illegally constructed and then used an assault weapon to defend your home. Say that again? Right. And then you got to lick the powder off of the old one and put it on the new one. Yeah, it's not a good situation. Powder tastes awful. I think. So, another way is with a 22 bolt carrier group. You can literally take this out of here, replace it with a 22 carrier, and ta-da, that is a 22 long rifle rimfire. It is not an assault weapon. Put it together, there you go, have fun. Once again, okay, but then when are you going to get to shoot your gun? Never. It's a way to keep possession of the firearm, but it's not a practical way to keep using the firearm. So that's the problem. For some people who want to have them around for a time when maybe there are no laws, or the laws change, or laws don't apply anymore, that's a possibility. But in the meantime, you're not going to be maintaining proficiency on that gun. You're not going to be keeping trained and practiced on that gun. And we've all agree that a firearm, or any tool for that matter, which we are not well practiced in and aren't keeping up on our muscle memory on how to use it, that's a tool wasted, or at least less safe and less effective. So there are very limited situations, and again, to each heart, you will know your own solution, but very limited situations in which that's an effective long-term solution. And again, I want to point out, well, I just don't want them to know I have it. They know. And the last one is to go covert. That only works with completely unregistered guns. Every gun from, 1991, not 1999, 1991 on are traceable by the government. I also want to say that, once again, that is not an effective long-term solution. They need to go to the moon. They need to go to your buddy's place in Arizona or wherever. They need to not be here. They certainly need to not be at the range, and so then, once again, you're not getting practice on that firearm. It is not an effective solution. Well, it's just, they stay in my safe, we'll be okay. Absolutely not. If they're out and about, you have a medical emergency, EMTs come, they are bound to... They are supposed to report seeing any firearms out in the open. If law enforcement responds because you had a burglary break-in and they happen to see it out and about, you're in trouble. And here's a really scary one. In 2015, California passed something called the Gun Violence Restraining Order. That means that if I'm a member of your family, is there anyone here who doesn't get along with at least one member of their extended family? Okay, so any member of your family can call law enforcement and say, I have a strong concern. I know that my family member, David, has a lot of guns, and he's just acting very erratic. I don't think it's safe for him to have those guns. The law enforcement can get something called a gun violence restraining order, where they come to your house and raid you, and they take all of your guns. And then you have to prove you're innocent. You have to go prove before a judge that you are of sound mind and body, and that you are deserving of keeping your guns, and then you will pay to get them back. You'll pay a horrendous fee to get them back, because they have to be drossed back to you. It's really frustrating. And you have to pay usually a firearms agent to go get them for you for hours of time. That's chilling enough. Today, 2018, the California State Legislature is considering an expansion to the 2015 Gun Violence Restraining Order. Now, employers, co-workers, high school and collegiate staff members, and any mental health worker can also refer anyone, even people not under their care, for a gun violence restraining order. That's chilling, folks. So I had only a few hands go up when I asked, okay, how many of you have ever had less than perfect relations with a member of your extended family? Now, with that new group, employers, co-workers, high school and college staff, and mental health workers, how many of you have had anything less than stellar relations with every single one of those people in your life? I have not gotten along great with every single person I've worked with in my life. Absolutely correct. That could happen, and it has happened. Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is, because the warrant is issued in advance of you having a your day in court. Correct.
You're guilty until proven innocent.
Right. Now, what I will say is, I am in favor of proactive mental health services for people who might be a danger to themselves or others. But we have to go about doing that in some way that doesn't fundamentally violate their constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property. Is that correct?
So they're legalizing swatting is what it amounts to.
That's absolutely right. They are legalizing swatting. That's correct. And for some people, a confiscation raid on a gun violence restraining order will escalate into violence where previously there was no problem at all. That's just a fact. It's chilling, but it's a fact. So when do I lose my chance to do something? Monday. Seriously, ever say it with me? Monday. Thank you very much. I'll get to you in a moment. 80% home-built serialization for guns that you intend to register as assault weapons. The last day you can send that in is Monday. You can, and I strongly suggest it. At this point, we're so far behind. If you haven't done it yet, print out the form from the website for requesting a new serialization number request form. That's what it's called. You fill that out, you print it out, fill it out, and then scan it. If you don't have a scanner, come to my shop. I'll scan it for you, and then email that to the Department of Justice new serial number email. There's a specific email address just set up to receive serial number requests. That'll all be on the DOJ website. You can Google it. That leaves you a 4-business-day window before June 30th. It's already too late if something goes wrong in your registration, or they ask for additional clarifying material, or if they get overwhelmed. It is my hope that they have anticipated this flood of requests in the last month. June 30th, then, is your last day to register newly reclassified bullet button assault weapons. Again, if you don't have internet or email or aren't computer savvy, get with a buddy who is, because the best way to do this is going to be online through their automated system. You don't want somebody to be processing your mail that goes to their PO box that they don't even check every day, it seems like. Use the online CFAR system, register your guns. Remember, before you get on there, you are going to have to take those 4 pictures. They say exactly what 4 pictures they want on their website. Follow the instructions carefully and completely. It must already be a serialized lower in order to register as an assault weapon. We've established that with the 80% law, and that's why you got to get it registered Monday.
So Dave, can you clarify on the 80% home
bill
that you have self-serialized?
Yes. So you can, it's funny, my next bullet point is exactly that. You can self-serialize with your own number any 80%er that you do not intend to register as a bullet button assault weapon. So has anybody built like an 80% Glock or an 80% SIG? I got a couple people, several people. So that is not an assault weapon. That's just a single shot pistol. Because remember, because it's not on the safe handgun roster, we all had to build it first as a single shot pistol. And then later, after we built it, we converted it to a magazine fed pistol, right? Of course. So those single-shot pistols that we've converted, those aren't assault weapons. So that can have whatever number we want on it. The way to register that is to file a voluntary registration form, VolReg. It's a voluntary registration of a firearm in my possession. It's not an assault weapon, it's just a pistol. So I fill out that form and say, hey, and it says manufacturer, self-built, David Chong. Or source, self-built. It still has to follow all of those registration regulations and serialization and marking information. So in this state. So it doesn't have to have their assigned serial number, but per the ATF federal rules, it has to have your name on it because you are the manufacturer. In the past 10 years, I've seen lots of people put like Chong Arms or whatever, or you know, Molon Labe factories, and that doesn't work. It's got to be your first and last name, or some common variation thereof. Also, it has to have your full city and state, or commonly recognized variation thereof. So, for example, LACA would likely be acceptable for Los Angeles. Everybody knows what LA is. SD would probably be acceptable for San Diego. I wasn't sure, so I put San Diego. San Diego, CA. Any more questions on serialization?
So part two on that is, my understanding from what I've read in the regulations, a lot of the companies in the regulation is that while reg is still optional, is that consistent with your understanding?
That. So he's asked, well, is voluntary registration still optional? And the answer is, it appears not. There is still internet chatter on forums about whether or not these really do have to be voluntarily registered. But in the rules and regulations that were later published, that again went beyond what the law said, and then in one more, even further clarifying DOJ opinion letter that was sent out, it spells it out in black and white, unserialized firearms are no longer legal in the state of California after June 30th.
Third question.
Right. That's what, so he's asking, okay, third question. So unserialized things are not legal in California. What about serialized things that I put my own number on it that aren't registered? The law would seem to support that situation. The regulations speak directly against it. So if you choose, you would seem to be on the right side of the law if you chose to self-serialize your Glock 80 percenter that you built into a gun, for example, and then chose not to register it with the state. However, the regulations and what they're enforcing seems to suggest that they will prosecute you for that. And it's up to you to decide, okay, do I want to be the guinea pig who tries to say, I'm being prosecuted under an unjust law, an unwritten law. Yes. So we are very close to the next session. For those of you passing on to whatever the next session is, I want to release you. For those of you who are still interested in some more Q&A, do I have the room still? Okay. So thank you very much for your time. Those of you who are departing, I appreciate you. You know where to find me.
Yeah, I'm gonna see you.
Thank you. Thank you. So you've finished here. You know, I just want to bring us back to what does God say about this? What does God say? He will tell you. You got to search your own heart. I want to call your attention to Romans 13:1. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. Also, Peter, 1 Peter 2, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority. Okay, so that seems pretty clear. But remember, we established the supreme authority in these United States is what? The Constitution, right. And Isaiah 10 says, woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees. Romans 13:7, pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, and honor to whom honor is owed. That's apropos for our theme of the weekend. So it is qualified submission to the appropriate authority that God calls us to. Weigh these things, pray, reflect, ask God what he would have you do. And again, that's going to be a different answer for everybody. Before I released people, I really should have covered this important thing. Driver's licenses and AB 60 license. Do you all know about that? Okay. This is critical. How many of you in this room have renewed your license since January? Anyone? Okay. Would you two please pull out your driver's license? And I want you to look in the upper right-hand corner of the front. And I hope it was... Does it say anything there? There's a bear. Excellent. So you went in and you gave them your Social Security card, and very good. How about you? Okay. You have been gotcha'd. You are no longer a citizen of the United States in the eyes of certain transactions. So here is what happened. And before I flesh it out, I really do want to be fair to you, sir. What question do you... Yeah. You're the only one in this room.
Yeah, mid-July, I say, I have a change of heart. I want to register my AR now that I already have. I'm built in. I'm now, if I bring it forward at that point, it's a...
Felony. Yes, sir.
And the jails aren't empty. They're empty.
Right. We let all of the thieves and felons out of the jails, so there's plenty of room for you. Yeah. This truly is it. This is the last chance. So of course, at that point, your options are just limited. If you didn't do it by the 30th, well, you no longer have the choice to register it as an assault weapon. You darn well better get it into compliance with one of these solutions. You know, don't just drop it on the street. Okay, so very good. So some people will tell you, oh, that's bunk. They don't know what they're talking about. The Real ID Act of 2005 is that's a federal law. It applies nationwide. Every state does it. This is just some kind of weird gun agenda thing or some kind of anti-immigrant thing. It's absolutely, they're missing the point. Yes, the federal government passed the 2005 Real ID law. It's a good thing. Let me explain what it does. So Tennessee had these paper driver's licenses that you could copy on your home computer. California had these pretty good ones with digital stuff and holograms and things. They said, look, we're such a wide spectrum of security nationwide from state to state on what it takes to get a driver's license. Let's standardize. Everybody who wants to get a driver's license by 2020, I believe it is, has got to bring their Social Security card, they got to bring their birth certificate, they got to bring some kind of proof of residence showing they really do live here, a power bill or a car registration, something, saying you are who you are. And then the ID's got to have digital codes and a magnetic strip and holograms and doodads and woohoos. So, and picture, a good quality picture of at least this much pixels. Seriously, they had to say this nationwide. It's a great thing. It brings us all up to the same standard. Here's the problem. California's legislation went, oh, and some people aren't going to be able to get driver's licenses. Well, who? Illegal immigrants who aren't supposed to be here and don't have birth certificates and don't have Social Security cards. So they wrote AB 60 as a response saying, well, y'all, anybody who comes to us and wants a driver's license, just take the driver's test and you tell us who you are. Just state your name and we'll give you an official driver's license from the state of California. So, by the way, I had strong concerns that this would immediately bolster certain political parties voting. And no, that's ridiculous. This is just so that we're safe and insurable on the roads. No, absolutely not correct. San Francisco just passed an ordinance that since illegal immigrants use the school systems, they should be able to vote for their school board officials, like me. So there's nothing to prevent those people, nothing. Because they don't check ID, there's nothing to prevent those people from asking for a full ballot instead of asking for the undocumented resident ballot. So that is how they can absolutely get illegal votes of non-U.S. citizens in U.S. elections. That's amazing. But so anyway, they created this AB60 license that you don't doesn't require any other identification other than you stating who you are, and the it is now the default license of the state of California. So when you go in, like you did, and just like every other time you have in your life, renew your license, or just like every other time you have in your life, you fill out the stuff on the mailer that they send you, and you just renew by mail, or you use their very convenient online system to say, yeah, it's still me, send me a new license. They will send you the illegal alien license, the AB60 license, which has these beautiful words on it, federal limits apply. You cannot fly with it. By 2020, it's not even valid for identification in another state. You can't rent cars with it. You can't sign contracts with it. It is completely useless except as a license to operate a motor vehicle within the state of California. It's pretty shocking. And what's especially shocking is even after the California DMV admitted that yes, there have been some errors. We do need to give more explanation on site as to what this license is. They still aren't disclosing to people that the AB60 license immediately revokes your right to purchase or transfer guns or ammunition because it's not a federal picture ID. And a firearms transaction is a federal transaction.
So we go into the DMV and say, I don't want an AB license.
Right. You say, I want the real ID. Okay. That is the only thing you can accept. And don't think, oh, they let me go without showing my birth certificate. No, you just got whammied. You just got a federal limits apply AB60 license. Yes. No. It will not. A passport will work as one of the IDs that you need, but it won't work for buying a gun. I will refer you to the DMV's website, especially after we had a viral internet post that got 7 million views and something like 1 million shares. They have changed their ways and made it very clear what you're getting. They still don't say that you can't buy guns if you don't get it. But I'll refer all questions about what qualifies for the AB license to the DMV website. It's so clearly laid out.
And those are the same people that are going to be doing your gun registration.
Right.
So what if you had renewed previous?
So that's a great question. So for those people who renewed before the AB60 licenses start getting issued, you have a normal license. It just happens to not be a real ID. So by January 2020, you need to go back in and get a real ID. That's to get all the expanded stuff. But remember, real ID takes effect in 2020. When they rolled out AB60 licenses, they started removing people's rights in advance of 2020. So now this poor gentleman is stuck. Even though real ID isn't even in effect yet, he was issued a non-citizen's ID and can't do anything.
Can't he just go back and get a real ID?
Yeah, just hop right back into the DMV and say, hey, can we fix this? It'll only take a day. But yes, that's all that he has to do. All you have to do is go back and suffer the DMV again. To do what? You want to use a passport to do what? No, you may not do that. It is not a photographic ID. A passport does not work for any sort of gun transactions whatsoever. It does not have your doesn't have your address on it, and it's not a verifiable form of residency in this state only as a U.S. citizen.